Hello and welcome back to Legends of Surgery. I'm your host, Tyler Rouse. In my research on topics for the podcast, I occasionally come across one famous surgeon that has a family member that's also a famous physician and sometimes also a surgeon. In this case, there are actually three brothers that were surgeons, two of which were famous enough to have things named after them. Without further ado, let's meet the Krukenbergs. For many of you, I would guess that the name Krukenberg immediately makes the tumor of the same name come to mind. Friedrich Ernst Krukenberg, the youngest of seven children, was born April 1st, 1871 in the town of Halle an der Saale, an ancient city in Germany. Friedrich studied medicine in Halle and later at the University of Marburg. Here his teachers included the ophthalmologist Theodor Axenfeld and pathologist Felix Jacob Marchand. Interesting fact about Marchand, he coined the term atherosclerosis in 1904. He created the term by combining two Greek words, athero meaning gruel, and sclerosis meaning hardening. I thought that was kind of neat. Anyways, it was while studying under Marchand that he described a, quote, fibrosarcoma, end quote, of the ovary, which became known as a Krukenberg tumor. Marchand had described a peculiar type of ovarian cancer in 1879. He gave Krukenberg six cases, which he used to prepare his doctoral thesis. This was published in 1896, when Krukenberg was just 25 years old, in an article called, quote, Über das Fibrosarcoma ovarii mucocellulari carcinomatodes, end quote. That's a mouthful, so let's review that lesion. Okay, so apparently 6 years after his paper was published, it was discovered that the Krukenberg tumor was not a new type of primary ovarian cancer, but as we now know, actually a metastatic lesion from what's called a signet ring cell adenocarcinoma to the ovary. Quick note on that terminology. A signet ring is basically a ring with a flat top used to make a distinctive personal seal in wax. The cells of this lesion have a central pool of mucin, mimicking the finger hole, which pushes the nucleus to the edge of the cell, mimicking the face of the ring in profile. Krukenberg tumors account for 1 to 2% of ovarian tumors, and most cases, about 70%, come from stomach cancers. Colon, appendix, and breast make up most of the rest. So how does a tumor go from stomach to ovary, typically without spreading anywhere else? This was a mystery for a long time, but is now thought to be retrograde lymphatic spread, meaning going against the typical direction of flow of lymph fluid. This is opposed to direct spread in the peritoneal or abdominal cavity, since there aren't usually any other tumor deposits in the abdomen. These tumors tend to occur in younger patients, average age 45, and typically involve both ovaries, bilateral, and are often quite large. Unfortunately, the survival is poor, with a median survival of about 14 months. However, if the mets are limited to the ovaries, surgery may render patients free of residual disease, increasing survival, which highlights the importance of early detection. So Friedrich actually never published anything further and returned to ophthalmology, eventually setting up practice in his hometown of Halle. He passed away February 20, 1946 at the age of 76. But his story isn't quite done. The ophthalmic term Krukenberg spindle is named after him too. I know, that's a new one to me too. This is a vertical, spindle-shaped or fusiform, fusus is the Latin word for spindle, symmetrical deposit of melanin or brown pigment in the deep layers of the cornea. From what I can gather, the significance of this is that as an early indicator of pigment dispersion syndrome, which can lead to pigmentary glaucoma. Last thing, it's also known as Axenfeld-Krukenberg spindle after Friedrich's teacher. So the oldest of the three brothers I'll cover is George Heinrich Peter Krukenberg, who was born in 1856. Unfortunately, all I can find out from sources in English is that he was a professor of gynecology at the University of Bonn and died in 1899, which would have made him only 43. So the last, and to me most interesting brother, is Hermann Krukenberg, born June 21st, 1863, making him the middle of the three brothers, in Kalb, which according to Google Maps is near Halle, Friedrich's birthplace. He's interesting for an eponymous surgery he developed from his experiences in war, and some of the connections he has to some other famous surgeons. So Hermann studied at the universities of Bonn, Strasbourg, and Heidelberg. In Bonn, he was a surgical assistant to Dr. Friedrich Trendelenburg. Now that name should ring a bell to anyone that works in an OR, as a patient position is named after him, along with a number of other things, which we will cover in another podcast. Following his training, he worked in Hamburg under Max Schied, a slightly more obscure but still very interesting German surgeon who pioneered some unique surgical procedures, and maybe we'll get back to him at some point too. Anyway, In 1892, he worked as a ship's doctor in South America, and then returned to Germany to become the manager of a private clinic in Halle, replacing the legendary Dr. Richard Volkmann. By 1899, he was chief surgeon at a municipal hospital in Liegnitz, and was later pulled into the quagmire that was the First World War as a field surgeon. It was during this experience that Hermann developed a surgery after working on a soldier that had lost both hands to shrapnel. Now, as regular listeners know, I try to get original source material, but since the article that he published describing the operation was printed in German in 1917, I had to use some secondary sources. So the operation itself is known as the Krukenberg procedure. The idea is to turn a forearm stump into a pincer. I won't go into extensive detail, but here are the basics of the surgery. Incisions are made on the volar and dorsal sides of the forearm, which is front and back, to make skin flaps that will wrap around the inner parts of the two bones of the forearm, the ulna and the radius. The bones, muscles, and nerves are then separated from each other. There is something called an interosseous, meaning between bones, membrane that connects the two, and so it's divided. Care must be taken to preserve the nerves and muscles attached to each bone, making sure especially not to disturb the pronator teres, one of the main muscles that will provide the pincer grasp strength. The flaps are then sewn up, and that's it. Most recent literature refers to a paper from 1980, published by Swanson and Swanson in the Clinical Orthopedics and Related Research Journal, as the source for the procedural description, and it's quite detailed. Obviously, it's more complicated than I've described, but those are the fundamentals. I'll post some illustrations of the surgery on Twitter and Facebook. It's important to note, too, that rehabilitation and therapy are key to function. This procedure was originally intended for patients that were both blind and had lost both hands, which at the time of World War I was often due to anti-personnel mines. The reasoning is that without sight, prosthetic hands couldn't be used, as there's no feedback by touch, just the sight. So the Krukenberg procedure allows patients to have touch or tactile feedback to the point where some blind patients with this have been able to read Braille. With training, the pincer can grasp objects up to 10 kilograms and have two-point discrimination of 4 millimeters in sensation, meaning they can tell that there are two objects, not one, touching their skin when they're as little as 4 millimeters apart. You can test yourself with an unfolded paperclip and a friend, eyes closed. A number of papers, however, describe the operation on other patients, such as children born without a hand or hands that have sight, and amputees in developing countries. We forget that not everyone has access to things like robotic hands and hand transplants, which sounds like an interesting podcast episode. For many, even obtaining a prosthetic hand is difficult. A Lancet article from 2000 described 11 patients from Sierra Leone which were victims of violence in their civil war and had become amputees. They did 3 single-hand and 8 double-hand Krukenberg procedures, and on the 10 patients with follow-up, all could eat and drink by themselves and do activities like dress and bathe themselves, brush their teeth, comb their hair, and even shave. Imagine how life-changing that would be for somebody. The downside often described is about cosmesis, meaning the appearance of the claw-like forearm, but given the amazing functionality it restores, most patients are very pleased. And prosthetic hands can be fit over the pincer, but most patients wind up abandoning them because of the loss of feel and function. Although no longer commonly done in the Western world, Dr. Hermann Krukenberg's ingenious procedure remains an important contribution to surgery. So that wraps up another episode of Legends of Surgery, and I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we'll go back to one of the first podcasts, The Ether Dome, and tell another side of the story of early anesthetics by covering the story of chloroform, along with a couple of famous doctors that are intimately tied to its history. So join us then. Please rate the podcast on iTunes and leave a comment there. Follow me on Twitter at Surgery Legends. Like us on Facebook at Legends of Surgery. Or send an email to legendsofsurgery@gmail.com. As always, I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on the podcast or ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening.